We're continuing Koheles. We're up to what's called the fourth chapter, the first pasuk. Shlomo HaMelech noticed that there's so much injustice going on in the world, and the world seems to be acting as though it's a dog-eat-dog world, and people don't discern the difference between a human and an animal. And Shlomo HaMelech says, in a world like that, just enjoy your lot as you're working. But he hasn't yet dealt with the fact that you look to the justice system and you see the most corrupt individuals there. What are you going to do? So Shlomo says in this chapter, Veshavti ani, Vareit kol ha'ashukim, Asher nasim tachat ha'shamesh. And then I went back and I analyzed and I said, wait a second. What about all those people who have been hurt, who injustice has been done to? Vehine dimata ashukim. And I look at the tier of those that have been wronged. Vein lahem minachem. And no one can comfort them. What are you going to tell a child who's born retarded and comes to you and says, why? What are you going to tell a child who's born crippled and comes to you and says, why? What are you going to say to a child who's born a bastard, a mamzer, and says, why? What did I do wrong? So Shlomo says, okay, so I have this theoretical formula. If you live life as a dog-eat-dog world, so then enjoy it as you can. But what about all those people? We said there are injustices going on. So what about all those people who were hurt? And they did nothing wrong. They don't deserve it. And there's no one there to comfort them. They're crying and no one's there to comfort them. Umiyad oshkeihem koach vein lahem menachem. And it's worse than that. You have people who did nothing wrong and they're being oppressed. And their oppressor has the strength to continue oppressing them. And there's no comforter. They live in a world where they're oppressed and it just keeps going. And there's no one there to comfort them. Today, human trafficking is a big deal. So they're making a big issue about all these girls that are being lied to. They tell them they have a good job for them. They tell them they're going to make a lot of money and all kinds of things. And then they show up in whatever country and they're forced into a totally different life than they were expecting. They're being oppressed. And their oppressor keeps having the strength to oppress them. And there's no one there to comfort them. Veshabeyachani et hametim shekevar meitu. Shlomo says, you know what? You look at the world, you look at how unfair things are. I praise the dead who are already dead. Mina chayim asher heimachayim adena. They're so much better than the people who are left around living. You look at life, there's so much sorrow on this earth. What's life about? And if I could add my own understanding in this, a part of Shlomo's claim is, I just told you, live life and enjoy. Well, how are you enjoying? What's going on in the rest of the world? What are you saying? I told you already twice, Shlomo says, go enjoy. That's the best life you can live. Yes, there's injustice going on, so you might as well enjoy what you can. Really? Is that fair? And so I praise those that are already dead. They don't have to live with this sorrow of knowing how much wrong is happening in the world. They're so much better than those that are still living now. So I'm adding my own interpretation that perhaps Shlomo is saying that there's a certain claim. You're living in a world that's not right and you're not making it right. So of course we all have excuses. Maybe we should digress for 1 second, okay? Just give me one thought to throw out at you. We all say, what can I do about Cambodia? What could I do about Rwanda? What could I do about Ghana? What can I do about... You just look across the continent. Look throughout Africa. How many people are being killed and tortured and maimed? What can I do about Iran? All those innocent civilians that are being killed? So that's an interesting excuse. I ask, does it show up in our davening anywhere? We daven to Hashem about many things. Do we also daven about all those innocent people suffering all around the world? So we say, what can I do about human trafficking? And what can... Wait a second. You're daven about the soldiers in Gaza. What about all the rest of humanity that's suffering? So...
God isn't sitting in the sky saying, okay, I'm listening to your prayer. We pray for ourselves as a personal development. You have to go out there and do something. You can't rely on God doing a miracle for you.
You're putting together many concepts.
Yeah.
Okay, so one at a time.
Okay, so the first one is prayer is for us, not for God.
Prove it. Because the Torah gives us a mitzvah when there's a time of war, when there's a time of need, when there's a time of danger, to pray. So the Torah is saying, do it for yourself.
The word prayer is in the conversation Hippalel, which is reflexive. And
wait. Hit palel. But what does the Torah call it? You took a word. What does it say in the Torah? I'm sorry, it's a biblical mitzvah. And the Torah discusses praying in the temple. Vikashtem misham et Hashem Elokecha. You will seek out Hashem. Right.
Seek out doesn't mean pray. Seek out goes out there and look at the world. It's tradition to pray, but...
Wait. I'm just trying to remember the verse. One second. I'm remembering the verse before and the verse after. Give me a second. Let me try to remember the verse there. I have to find the pasuk. Top Seder. We'll leave it for a separate discussion. I have to find it. Top, I'm not finding it right now. Where is it? Top. I have to get back to you on that. Not finding it right now. Back to Koheles. Okay, and I have to look for it. I don't remember where it is. Whatever. Let's leave it. One second. I'll find it later. Right now, you know how it is.
Okay, so let's forget the first one. The second is very, very good. We can't rely on a miracle from God just in prayer. We have to go out there and do something. And think that.
I'm listening.
Yes. So
okay, why that doesn't contradict prayer. The fact that you have to act doesn't mean you don't have to pray.
Prayer isn't the solution.
Prayer isn't the solution. Okay.
You just said you said that we have to come to the prayer.
No, you didn't say anything. First of
all, I didn't say what prayer achieves. I asked a question. I asked whether our prayer is only about ourselves or our prayer is about other suffering people in the world. That's all I asked. You're saying prayer wouldn't resolve their issue. Okay. Back to Koheles. Shlomo says, I praise the dead rather than the living. And even better than those two, the living and the dead, are those that weren't even born. Those who never witnessed all the evil that's being done in the world. There are so many injustices in this world. Better than the living, better than the dead, are those that never had to see any of this. So, that's an interesting thing. Who is it that he's saying is better? There's no one. He's saying he who wasn't. Okay. וראיתי אני את כל עמל. Shlomo HaMelech looks and he says, I see all the work, ואת כל כישרון המעשה, and all the skill and how much people invest, כי הקינתי שמי ראיהו. The simple reading here is this is what causes jealousy among people, because there are differences. This one has more skill, this one has less skill, this one works harder, this one attains more. That's the simple reading in the Pasuk. And this is foolish and this doesn't last forever. Why are people so jealous of that? No. Re'ut Ruach is the destruction of the spirit. So, yeah.
He said at this point he's still not at his bottom line and he still hasn't factored in religion.
I didn't say he didn't factor in religion. I said there he didn't factor in religion, in those lines. Earlier he did, and over here, according to a few, I said the simple reading in the Pasuk. Our tradition is that he's saying something else.
So I think it sounds a lot like Eel, who said it would be better if he'd never been born.
Right, so the truth is that that's a different point. You're going back to Psukim. So over there, really there's a discussion between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Is a person better off? Now that's bottom line. That's not philosophy like Koheles. That's not, Havamina. That's what I would have thought. That's bottom line. What do I think? Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel will have an argument. Is it better for a person to have been born, or is it better for a person had he not been born? What's their conclusion?
Better not.
Better not. Right? But if you're here, no one asked you, make it work. Right? Do the best you can. Now, so there's potential for good once you're born. But there's also tremendous potential for bad. And there is a tremendous force pulling us down. And it's very hard to overcome that. So even though you'd say, but the potential for good is so great. Right. But the potential for bad is so potent. And so their conclusion is, you would have been better off the other way. And you can add to that many of the points we've already seen in Koheles, that there are many forces at play that are beyond our control. The guy who's born into slavery in East Africa, and he's the slave of a tribe that's butchering another tribe, there's very little he has in life. No one asked him. He's born into it. And you're born into an era. We're very fortunate. We're born into this era where we have a lot of blessing, thank God. We're probably maybe the most blessed era that ever was. I'm saying in a physical sense. The peace we live in. We have 1 week of missiles falling and we go crazy. But our women don't die at childbirth generally. And our everything. We don't die of gum disease at age 30. We expect to live a long life. We have it. But throughout the generations, people didn't have it so good. So, theoretically, it's nice to be living. When we have a toothache, we go to the dentist, then a day later, we don't have a toothache. They didn't have that back then. The average person didn't have his teeth by age 30. The average person buried one out of every two children, at least. Go talk to the old Yemenites. They'll tell you. For every child they have at least one dead. At least. I mean, I spoke to my Yemenite friends. That's what they hear from their grandparents. So, we don't have a lot of choice about where we're going to be born, what we're going to contend with. The bottom line in the Gemara is, you've been better off not being born. So that's not Eov. The fact that you have potential to do good and accomplish, well, that's once you're here. You better take advantage of it. But their conclusion was, you would have been better off not being born. Because the potential is in two directions, and and it's very hard, and there, I'm adding, going based on what Kohelet said earlier, there are so many forces that are out of your control. So God doesn't expect of you, but you're saying, I have potential to go high. Really? Do you always have potential to go high? Meaning, sometimes you don't. So you can say, I'm going to be the best I possibly could. Be right, within a certain system. Within so many forces that are at play, that are out of your control. So some people are very fortunate. We were born to a fortunate era. You want to learn Torah? Great, you have free books. You had people who were illiterate and couldn't learn Torah. Why does the Talmud discuss Ger shenitgayel leven anochim etinok shenishba? We have a concept. What's the prototypical person who has no concept of Judaism, but he's a Jew? A person who converted to Judaism and then went back to live among non-Jews. Why? Because how could he afford to move to the Jewish ghetto? He has his livelihood back there. So it was a common thing. A guy would come, study Judaism as best as he could, convert, and then go back to his home territory, knowing almost nothing, having no books. And his whole concept of Judaism was very limited to the little education he could get back then. And then he ends up being the prototypical Jew who knows nothing, who comes and says, ooh, I mean, we had a guy here. He went through a Reform conversion and thought he was Jewish. And then he tried to observe the whole Torah. And he said to me, you know, it took me 3 years. First I stopped eating pork. I was very careful when I'd go to the restaurant. I'd only eat shrimp. And, okay, that was what he knew of Judaism. And then I learned that I shouldn't do that. So every time I confused and I used my meat in my milk pot, I'd toivel it in the mikvah. This is what he told me. Okay, so, you know, and he was dead serious. He didn't know. It's not his fault. But in the days of the time, so we're, you know, today it's easy. You go online, you have Torah for me, 123Torah.com, MachonMeir.com. Come on, you have the whole world at your fingertips. It's not so easy. It's not. The world was never as good as we have it now. So Shlomo Amel says, I look at the whole world and I say there's so much injustice and there's so much pain and there's no one there comforting people at the end of the day. So the best is a person who was never born, who never had to contend with this. V'ra'iti ani, and then I took a look at kol amal. So we translated this pasuk the first time, all the toil that people work to advance in the physical world. But our tradition is that amal throughout Tanakh can mean toil, and amal could mean the sins that are, so to speak, God's toil, that God has to contend with the world that does not live up to his mitzvot. V'eit kol kishron ha-maaseh, and I look at where people have talent or people do things and theoretically they're doing what's right when really kihi kinatish me're'eyu. Even when you enter the realm of doing right, you have jealousy. He has to outperform his neighbor. Why is it that I have to wake up for davening early so that I get up earlier than my roommate? So he sees I'm more pious than him. Shlomo HaMelech says, I look at the world. And when I look, I say, you have those who are the sinners, and then you look at those that are doing good, and they're also doing it, ki hi kinat ish me'reyeyu. Out of jealousy, I'm going to be better. I'm going to show them I'm better. I'm going to be more pious. When I look at that, I say, guess what? Destruction, that's not a worthwhile world. That's not something that's eternal. Right now he's extreme. Shlomo Melech is going the extreme. That's the philosophy. He's pushing every direction and saying, every direction I look, it's wrong. So we've discussed that in everything we do, it's not 100%. We're not 100% for the sake of heaven, and we're not 100% just for the sake of ourselves. Shlomo Melech isn't doing that right now. Right now he's going to the extreme. He's saying, you know, when I look at the world, there's so much suffering, and there's so much wrong, and even what's right is wrong.
Sounds like a very emotional response to the world, in a way. Like, it sounds like, I thought, he's kind of like because like a lot of people are like that, and everybody, you know, talk about it as if everybody's like that. It,
Well, if you want, I'll answer you with the Hasidic thought, which really has basis in other sources, and that is there's an idea in Hasidut that our goal, one of our goals in this world, is to do one mitzvah right. You've given all 613, you got to live by them. But your goal, other than living by the 613, is to get one right. Why? Because in everything we do, it's hard for us to overcome ourselves and not to be self-serving. And there's a phenomenal Gemara that backs this idea. That's why I'm saying it doesn't really originate in Hasidut. It really originates in the Rishonim, in the ancient philosophical works. The Gemara discusses two rabbis who were being held by the Romans to be tortured to death. And one asked the other, "Did you ever have anything you did right?" And he says to him, "Yeah." He says, "You know, once I had money for charity for the poor, and I mixed it with other money that was for charity for the poor, and I couldn't figure out which was which, so I took out of my own pocket, and I covered the difference, and I gave them both to the poor." So the Rishonim asked, "Really? The man's collecting money, putting himself all out for the poor. He has myriads of mitzvos in his packet, right? He could say, you know, I fed the poor, I took care of the sick, every morning I davened, I gave lectures to the crowds, I did so many mitzvos." Well, he asks him, "Did you get anything right?" And he gives him this one example. What's the big idea here? So I think it's already the Ran who says this answer. Right, but everything else he did, he had a very hard time being able to say, "I did this mitzvah really for the sake of heaven." Because at the end of the day, if you know you're getting rewarded, and you know people are seeing you, and you know you're going to feel better about yourself having done it, it's very hard to find a mitzvah where you can say, "I did this for God." It's very hard. Go look at everything we do. It's very hard to ignore it. You know, I could tell you it's one of the reasons I didn't want to go into the rabbinate, and that's one of the reasons I don't like davening here. It's very hard for me to daven when I know everyone's looking at me. I want to be talking to God. I don't want to think about the eyes that are looking at me. You stand in front of the crowd. I don't want to think about you. You know, sometimes I ask myself, could I come to shul and stand in the back? You know, people don't like their rabbi in the back. They want him in the front. But I want to be in the back. I want to be able to at least try to make an attempt. But then, you know, if I'm going to go to the back, everyone's going to say, "Oh, he's being so humble. He's being so modest." Again, it's a catch-22. It's so hard to break out of that. You want to. You try to. So he asked him, do you have one mitzvah you could tell me?" So he tells him, "Yeah, there was one time. No one knew about it. No one would have known the difference. I had a mix-up of the money. No one would have known. And then I added out of my own pocket. So I did a million pious things. But it's so hard to find something that you could say, I didn't do that for any other reason." It's hard. And the more honest we are, the more we see that we are affected by everything external. So you're saying, isn't Shlomo HaMelech being extreme here? I don't know if he's being extreme. So he's taking one example of how biased we are and how self-centered we are, even in our performance of mitzvot. So Shlomo HaMelech says, "I look at the world, and I see even when people do what's right, there's an element of jealousy from one another." And maybe we can add to that, "I want to feel better than him. I want to feel more pious than him." No. I said the whole book of Tehillim this morning. So again, one way of attaining that spiritual height is the concept the Chayei Adam quotes in the beginning of the Chayei Adam from the Zohar. He says there's a concept in the Zohar that every mitzvah is much greater if you do it modestly, if you do it quietly. No one knows about it. Now we can understand that concept. Because the less people know about it, the more it is a mitzvah that you could say, you're getting there. We're not yet there because we all know that that's not 100%, but it's at least a step in the right direction. Yes?
I did not ask anything.
Okay. Fasuk Hey.
I want to say something.
Yes?
I don't see why it's wrong to do good things out of jealousy as long as it's a good act.
No matter what the motive is. Okay, so I think that's true on one level. We're just saying there's a higher level. Even if you'd say, "I'm doing it for the sake of the good, but not for the sake of me," I think we can see that that's better than doing it for me.
Do you not think that every day...
I don't see that, because a good act is still a good act.
Agreed.
The motive you do it for, I mean, it really doesn't make a difference.
It's levels.
Growth, not for the person who's hungry. If you give up donation to a food pantry because you want your name on there. It's the CEO food pantry. It makes a difference to you, not the guy who's eating it. To your growth, I think. I think what you're saying, the effect it has on the person who's getting the tzedakah of the good deed, probably doesn't make any difference at all. I mean, they do talk actually about the degree, if he sees you and he knows you.
The lowest form is
he knows that you're giving. But you're totally right. I was saying that a good deed, if whatever gets you to do it, is certainly better than not doing it at all.
But the example you used, I think, was very good about getting up really early for davening in the morning, because there is, I think, somewhere, I wish I could remember the chapter and verse in the book, but it says you're to provoke one another to good deeds. I thought it was the exact wording of it. If you can,
you're right, you should be jealous of someone.
To provoke another person to good deeds.
Right, so what does it say in the Menorah Samar? What does Rav Yitzchak Abuhav write? He writes, it's a tool we use, it's a stepping stone. No one's saying that what you did is wrong. What we're saying is we want to get to a higher level. No one's saying you didn't do right. There are three ways you can gauge a mitzvah. One is, how hard was it for me to perform it? Two is, what did it affect in the world? And three is, what is the weight of that mitzvah in heaven? So if I'm just going to gauge the first two, then right. You could say, what do I care how hard it was for me to perform it? Let's see what it accomplished. We don't say that. We say both. Both make a difference. A mitzvah isn't only gauged based on its impact. You have a guy who has $10 in his pocket, but he gives the poor $1, it's worth much more than a guy who has $1,000 in his pocket. So it's not only... Why?
No, I don't see why that would make any difference. It's...
To the poor person who's getting it,
I understand that he's giving everything he has. But still, it's like... you can't expect a rich man to do everything he has. He can do much better if he kept something for himself to invest in other...
I didn't say what I expect of him. I didn't say for a minute what I expect of the rich man. I didn't say that. I just said that the gauge, you have two gauges and then a third. One is, what did I give? What did I take out of me? And two is, what did I accomplish? Then there's a third. How big a mitzvah is it in heaven? But that, all three are valid points. We didn't discuss your decision.
And I'm saying that I personally don't think that you should base the decision on more.
But that, we didn't say that. We're not even discussing that.
No, I know, but you said that that's third.
Saying that's a third factor in gauging the value of a mitzvah. That's all.
You know, but I don't think I should be using that factor. Because to use something that, number one, you don't know is actually true. And number two, something...
If you doubt the truth of the Torah, then you don't begin. Fine. So you could doubt, but then fine. So then we don't start.
Can I ask a question about whether or not it would have been created?
You can ask whatever you want, as you see. Yes.
Why do I think the Ramchal says that? Why do I remember the Ramchal saying that Hashem created us so he could do chesed for us? And then, like, isn't that kind of like, if the Ramchal is correct, then those who say that it's not good to be interior are kind of completely tova? Or, I mean, I know I'm having...
That's a very good question. But the Ramchal himself says that if you look at all the suffering in the world, this can't be the point of life. It can't be that God created a world for the sake of this world, because look at the world. It seems like a pretty bad job if that was the point of the world. The same idea that Shlomo HaMelech says here. You can't ignore the suffering that's here. You can't just say, yeah, it's a perfect world, everything's great. Well, wait a second. What about everyone who doesn't feel that way? What about all those people who are suffering? And suffering on so many levels. You know, We gave physical examples, spiritual examples. There are a million examples. Again, so now you want me to go into Ramchal, which deserves a class in Ramchal. That's not here. I'm saying that's a fair question. It's just we can't keep going. You know, we got to stay on topic. I can address as much as I can within the topic. Yeah.
What's the idea, though, that they say it's better?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Aviel. I'm sorry. Just
suffering, but because they end up worse than when they started the soul. They blow the opportunity. So, I mean, if we get it right, it would have been better if
agreed.
It doesn't have to be this way.
Agreed. 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 I just want to tell Yosef that if I could answer you in a minute or two, I would answer you. I don't know of a way to answer that question without at least 45 minutes to an hour. A lot of introductions, and then we could deal with that, because I think we have to really understand what Ramchal said when he said that, and I think it's not understood correctly. I'm not the only one that says that. I don't know. The truth is that the answer is in a Chazon Ish. But the problem is that after you read the Chazon Ish, I don't think you need a class to put two and two together. So I don't know where. You can just look it up where it's spelled out. I don't know. The Chazon Ish really in Emunah Bitachon, I think in the 10th chapter, somewhere around there, he discusses this idea that you can't just take Ramchal at face value. That's blasphemy. God wanted to do good. Very good. God wanted to do good. So he couldn't do it without creating a world. How can you say that? So then there's a whole... You have to understand what Ramchal is saying there. There's much more depth to it. Okay, I'm sorry. On a Thursday night.
Rabbi, I understand. There is an answer way too short.
It's also a tough question, and the idea that it's not like the rabbi goes, Shemaiah Hillel was saying God made a mistake in creating the world.
He's no.
What people have done with the world means it's like when you're, stupid analogy, but a sports team, you know, that does terribly. Better you didn't play today.
Oh.
Not that you would have had to have, you know, if you practiced, if you did what you could have, if you used your potential, you could have done much better. So most people, I imagine they're saying, don't make the most of this life. Matter of fact, they may leave it in worse state than they started.
Right.
That's the reason. Not because it can't be better, it hopefully will be better.
But again, we're taking one quote, one topic, and we're not really delving. There's so much more to be discussed. Because just remember that Shlomo HaMelech in the beginning of the book began unabashedly by saying, what a terrible world. I don't see the point in creation of the first day, second day, third day. He goes every day of the week and says, I wouldn't have done any of it. So he doesn't say I wouldn't have done any of it. He says when you look at it, it seems like something that's not infinite. So then why? So he looks at the world. Chazal say he began his book by looking at the world and saying, wait a second, why do this? So this needs a little bit of work, which maybe we'll get to at the end of the book. We'll have to come back.
Why is of all people they say you say this?
So let's see. Wait, he hasn't hit a conclusion. That's what I'm saying. It's a work in progress, but that's why it's a little hard to assume what you're assuming in Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Let's see. הכסיל חובק את ידיו ואוכל את בשרו. הכסיל, the fool, חובק את ידיו. He hugs his hands throughout the summer, and then when the winter comes, he doesn't have anything to eat. Ve'ochel et bisaro, and then he eats his flesh, so to speak. Even his flesh is destroyed in the winter because he wasn't preparing in the summer, so he doesn't have a way of taking care of himself. So that's the simple reading of the verse. Hakisil choveket yadav. The fool hugs his hands, and he's not working, he's not being productive. ve'ochelet bisaro. So this idea on a second level of interpretation is that a person, so to speak, if he's not preparing, he's not going to have what he needs. And in a second, Shlomo will elaborate on that in a second. But we have another level of interpretation, and that is that the fool is a reference to the wicked. And this goes back to another idea, the idea that Rav Saadia Gaon discusses in his introduction to Mishle. He says, if you want to sum up the morals that Proverbs is really the common theme in all of Proverbs and all of Mishle, so the idea is long-term versus short-term. So the reason we refer to the wicked as a fool is because wickedness pays off short-term, not long-term. And this is a recurring theme throughout Torah from the first mitzvah that God gives Adam about the forbidden fruit, where our tradition has it that an hour later he was going to have a commandment to eat that fruit. He messed up because he took it early. And that goes back to the whole idea of virginity and the whole idea of a couple not talking the final 7 days and then consummating their marriage. And then they're prohibited for 14 days. And this balance that the Torah repeatedly throws us into, where the strength of a person is his capacity to wait and ultimately attain a much greater pleasure, which has many, many examples in the physical life, something which everyone can experience. But at any rate, that is why in Tanakh, very often, the wicked are called the fools, because they're running after the quick and easy pleasure. And so HaKisil, the fool or the wicked, Choveket Yadav, he's not working because he's not interested in attaining things the legitimate way. He'd rather steal. Ve'ochel et bisaro. But the same theme which we see over and over again in Tanakh, there will be a judgment day, and then he will be green with envy as he sees that he was self-destructive in his way of life. And again, this is a recurring theme which people fall on over and over again, where the habits of short-sightedness and the quick and easy thrills are really self-destructive. And that's the idea of ochel et bisaro. He consumes his own flesh, which is a metaphor. Tov melocha hafnachat mi melocha hafnayim amal ureut ruach. So this is a beautiful pasuk in Pshat. The simple reading of the pasuk is, it is better to have one handful of nachat, better have one handful of things that your soul enjoys, than two handfuls of things that are upsetting. So sometimes you think more is better. No, depends more of what. So that's the simple reading of the pasuk. What? Chofnaim are two chofen, two handfuls. Yeah, chofen is one hand, and chofnaim are two handfuls.
This happens to use a kaf?
No, chofnaim is with a chet. Kaf is the palm of the hand. Tov melo kaf nachat. Better have one palm of the hand filled with nachat. Mi melo chofnaim. Chofen is the digging two handfuls of. Okay, so Chazal tell us tov melo kaf nachat. Second level of interpretation is you're better off having one handful of things which you attained honestly, which you worked to attain, than two handfuls of things attained through sin and things attained through methods which ultimately destroy one's spirit. And ultimately a person's going to pay for them. A third level of interpretation is that a person is better off with something that he worked to attain honestly and then he could live with peacefully than to attain more, even double, where he really killed himself to do it because he didn't like the work he was doing. So here's the answer to the question you guys were asking about what kind of job a person should take. So that's the third level of interpretation here, that better a job where one makes less but enjoys it than a job where he makes more but he's suffering as he's going through it. ושבתי אני וירא הבל תחת השמש. And then I again analyzed, and I saw another thing which is vain in this world. Yesh echad ve'ein sheni. You see a person who does things alone. He never takes anyone to work with him. Gam ben va'ach ein lo. He doesn't have a son. He doesn't have a brother. He works alone. Ve'ein keitz lechol hamalo. He works and works and there's no limit. Gam eino lo tisma osher. And he's never happy with what he has. He wants to have more and more. That's not enough. Ulemi ani amel. Shlomo HaMelech says, he doesn't ask himself, who am I working for? What are you working so hard for? Umchaser et nafshi mitova. And I don't let myself enjoy life. Gam zeh vel vinyan rahu. He has no kids. He's not going to leave it for anyone. And that too, says Shlomo HaMelech, working so hard for nothing, that's also a bad thing. So I don't want you to sit around being bored and doing nothing, but I don't want you killing yourself for nothing. And this, you all know these stories. These are the stories of the rich uncle you never met who suddenly leaves an inheritance. What was he working so hard making that inheritance for? If he had no kids and he never met you, his nephew, right? So there are many stories like that. Yeah, this is a recurring theme in life. So now Shlomo HaMelech is going a different angle. He says, okay, the world has injustices. We can't fix them. Life on its own is not something that I really hold of. But we're living here. Your best bet is to work honestly and enjoy what you're doing. Don't work too hard. Shlomo keeps reiterating that. Don't work too hard. You got to work, you got to live, and you got to enjoy as you work. And then Shlomo HaMelech says, people who work very hard and they have no family, what are they working so hard for? That's a terrible thing. And now Shlomo is going to go into the benefits of companionship. One of the ways in which we can overcome the world, in which we can overcome the hardships and the difficulties and the challenges and the sorrows and the things that are unfair in the world, is through companionship. And this is really the source for the whole idea of having a community. And you used to have a manor where the head of the manor had an army and he'd protect everyone on the manor. The whole idea that together we can do more than one of us can do. So Shlomo is beginning to develop the idea of one of the great benefits of life is companionship. And he's going to begin with the practical aspects of how companionship is what allows us to contend with the world and conquer the world, or at least not be conquered by the world. So Shlomo begins, Tovim ha'shenayim min ha'echad, two are better than one. And this is where we'll pick up, b'ezrat Hashem, next time.